It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Nightside. This is the Nightside Project.
Everything that happens now is happening now.
What happened then?
The past then.
When?
Just now.
We're it now.
Nightside on KSL.
A limited edition Fall. Summer season.
It is a little weird to be back here doing this.
Yeah, the weird part's me taking your temperature before each show.
The Nightside Project with Ethan Millard and Alex Carey. Streaming live on Alexa and on KSL News Radio at 102.7 FM.
Did you just play the limited edition spring season intro?
I said fall right at the right when it said it. Look, all the same COVID jokes from the summer and the spring. Guess what? They still work. People are still taking temperatures. We're aware of what that means. Mm-hmm. It's a very timely reference, and it works out. Ethan Millard, Alex Keery. Hey, we are back from any sort of version of a Thanksgiving. We went to St. George. We got away. Just our little family.
Good.
Yeah, we told all of our closest family members that we have COVID. That's why we couldn't go to anything. We can't come to anything. We all have COVID. So don't go down to St. George either, because that's where we're actually going to be riding out this wave. But we were found out, and then we ended up having to come back and actually come to work. So nobody's got COVID in the family yet. Mm-hmm. I'm just assuming it's bearing down on us, Ethan. I know you haven't gotten it. We all know somebody now close to us who have gotten it. That's all of us. People all around us are now getting it, but I've avoided it. So, but you
know a lot of people that are getting it. A lot of people.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't know if. It's a little bit scary, just because I just feel like I'm gonna have a rough go with it, because I'm like so. They're like the 40-year-old man, chubby Fruit Heights man gets is on a ventilator. That's why I feel like it's coming for me, dude. So I'm just trying to be as safe as possible. But
yeah.
That or it's a massive conspiracy. Those two things are what I figured out was going to happen.
It's one or the other.
I wanted to roll something out for you, Ethan, because this is information that is like right now. Okay?
Let's hear it.
And that is that the Utah monolith we've been very excited about, right?
Yeah.
You saw one showed up in Romania today, right?
Yeah.
So that's very cool.
Yeah. It looked very similar, but it looked like someone had taken a grinder to it and done these swirls on it.
It's like
a design.
So KSL5 TV tonight is doing a story on the people who removed the monolith, because they know who it is.
Oh, they do. Oh, I'm interested in actually
group,
to find out a little bit more.
Well, you'd be really fascinated in this, because the group who removed it actually is not the people who put it there.
Yeah, I got that impression.
I thought maybe it'd be the same group. But here's their vibe. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know who this person is, but this is a statement from Sylvan Christensen. Don't know who that is. We removed the Utah monolith because there are clear precedents for how we share and standardize and use our public lands. Ethan Millard's excited to hear the rest of this.
Yeah.
Natural wildlife, native plants, fresh water, etc. The mystery was the infatuation. We want to use this time to unite people and to behind the real issues here. We are losing our public lands, and things like this monolith do not help. Let's be clear, the dismantling of the Utah monolith is tragic. And if you think we're proud of it, we're not. We're disappointed. Furthermore, we were too late.
We're disappointed in ourselves.
Yeah. They said, we want to make it clear we were too late. We want to make it clear we support art, we support artists, but legality and ethics have defined standards, especially here in the desert, and absolutely so in adventuring. I was like, this is Ethan Millard. Did you dismantle the monolith? So it says the ethical failures of this artist for the 24-inch equilateral gouge in the sandstone from the erecting of the Utah monolith, which I didn't know was a thing, by the way. I didn't know they had done that.
It was they cut into the sandstone.
Was not even close to the damage that was caused by the internet sensationalism and the subsequent reaction from the rest of the world. The area was not prepared physically for the population shift, especially during a pandemic. People arrived by car, by bus, by van, by helicopter, planes, trains, motorcycles, and e-bikes, and and there isn't even a parking lot. There aren't even bathrooms. And yes, pooping in the desert is a misdemeanor. And I was like, this was written by Ethan Millard.
By me, yeah.
So there's at least some insight there. These guys, the people who removed it, were people who were upset by the effect it was having on the actual place, the physical place where it was located. And I was like, you know what? I make fun of Ethan for all this kind of stuff where he's like, you know, if you poop in the desert, it's a misdemeanor. That, I was very glad that these guys were like, look, we're trying to take – this was a little miniature, celebrity sensationalism, mm-hmm. and we had to kind of take back our own lands there. I thought it was pretty cool.
I like it, and I'll tell you, I was so disappointed. The monolith itself, I don't know, it didn't bother me that much. But you know what bothered me the most is when I read
– mainstream radio shows on our station were like, were they aliens? Yeah. I was disappointed in those people we work with too.
That was silly. But I read Zach Podmore. Is that the name of the Salt Lake Tribune writer?
I don't know.
Something like that. Sure. Anyway, I read his story and about going out there. And that was the part that was really disappointing because he said, he went out there and there were people on motorcycles ripping around off road.
Oh, yeah.
Like zipping around through the bushes.
Not on trails that they're supposed to be on. Yeah, yeah.
And the toilet paper blowing across the landscape. And that was so sad to me because I've seen how damaging that can be in other parts of the desert. And I posted on social media once it disappeared. I posted, it's probably for the best. This is why, eventually you stop sharing locations. Because I've had that experience where things start to get more and more busy and then the motorcycles show up.
Right.
And then the animals leave. And then the rock art starts getting shot and chipped off. And then in come
the 12-foot monoliths. Boom.
And then, pretty soon, you pull up to these areas that used to be wilderness. And, there might be, 30, 40 bikes and side-by-sides out there. No one stays on the trail because
sound effects.
Because there are a lot of ethical people in the OHV world. And there are a lot of turds. And unfortunately, you might go out there and there might be 20 really ethical riders and 5 turds.
And they ruin it for everybody.
They ruin it for everybody. Because
say, Bill, I'm going to jump off this sandstone here right on top of that monolith. Bro, watch this.
And they're out there. And the way that they talk. It's like the only value that wilderness has is for their motorcycle.
For them to be able to ride on it. Yeah.
It's humiliating, really. It's humiliating for our community. And
well,
it's
hold on a minute. We were on all the major network news for a while, Ethan. They mentioned Utah.
But in my mind, like that art installation, that wasn't the humiliating part. The humiliating part was the guys that said, let's go see it. Did you bring the TP? I don't need roads. I got. Was the humiliation in my mind. That was
you
the part
wipe your
that
butt
really
with my clutch,
nice.
Buddy. Come on now. You're fine. Hey, well, so I just thought that was a good little.
I'm glad they tore it out.
So they tore it out, and the guys who ripped it out were mad about all the people showing up. So I thought that was
well. And we should go to the desert. The problem is that we can't all go to the same place. And when you go out there, you got to respect the rules.
Can I ask you something?
You got to respect the rules, and so many people that go out there, they don't.
Okay.
And the best we can
how
do is
how are you
corral
supposed
them.
To poop then in the desert? You got to haul it out.
Yeah, unfortunately,
that
yeah,
is
you haul
that's
it out.
Pretty dumb.
I know.
But like, these are the people you want me to hang out with now?
It's not impossible.
Bunch of poop carriers?
I mean, it's not really impossible.
Bunch of poop haulers? No, I know it's not impossible, but I'm trying to get my kids into camping in the wilderness.
Yeah. Well,
I'm trying to get my wife to come on one of these trips. It's not happening now.
Well, you know what you got to do? Rent a nice trailer.
Me.
And just don't go like, because with camping trailers are great in the desert.
No,
the only
sure.
drawback is you can't go super far off road.
That's true.
But you can still find great quiet places. You have a trailer, you have a place that you can use the bathroom and it's not left on the ground.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
You should try that.
Hey, so I was going to say this too. We So the Christmas shopping this year is weird, and I don't know how you guys are doing this year. Are you guys doing? Is it? Are you scaling it back because you're like, this is weird and you don't go in? Because we do online shopping anyway. Online shopping took over our lives as it was, you know, a long time ago anyway. But
well, this is actually interesting you should bring this up, Alex.
Ooh.
Because in our family, this is actually a watershed year in the sense that things are changing in our family.
You're pooping in the desert more often. You're saving a lot of money. It's great.
Well, what's happened is in the past, Christmas used to be kind of about volume.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was like, well, you get an equal number of presents the kids can open up. Kind of didn't matter what it was. They'd be excited about
whatever. No, we're at that moment.
Thing.
We're at those things. We're they at that thing. Like, oh, yeah, just open it up. It's got bright colors on it. It lights up. Needs batteries.
And there's a lot to open, right?
Yes.
That's what they like.
Mm-hmm.
And
now they all just want one thing then, right?
Yeah. They pretty much kind of have one or two things that they're really hoping for. And the rest of the stuff they don't care about. And so things have really changed. So the Christmas shopping is primarily done and it went really fast.
But the problem is too, they're like, yeah, all I need is a MacBook Air. No problem. Like that's the other thing is everything gets more expensive because we're at this moment where we're trying to figure out because we have a 12-year-old now and he's exceptionally responsible. He's a super boy. He's a great student, all those things. And we've been debating about a phone, not a smartphone, but just one of those gab phones. You know what I mean? The ones that just take they just do the calls and the text to mom and dad. They only store like 10 numbers or whatever.
Right.
But it's a phone for us to be able to get a hold of him. Mm-hmm. And we decided against it. My wife is like, as soon as we do it, we're one step closer to get it to him being like, this isn't good enough. I need a smartphone now. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he's also going out and hanging out with friends a little bit more. And they go out and do the night games and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like wondering but I'm also pulled in the direction of I want to be the cool dad still a little bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's at that moment where stuff is not as important to him as it is obviously for the 5-year-old or for the 3-year-old in the family. So I feel bad for him because he's still in this weird present purgatory where he is still kind of a boy but also grown up a little bit. And so old stuff that he used to love, he's not cool anymore. And I'm not cool enough because I'm not getting him X, Y, and Z. And I think I've already prepared him in his mind that he thinks that they're all jokes that you're not getting a phone and that eventually he's going to get it. I'm like, this is going to be a sad moment for him on Christmas Day. Here's the other thing. I have my thoughts about Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. And I want to do my yearly reminder to parents. This is where you have to take back Christmas because Santa gets all of the attention.
Yeah.
Okay.
All the credit.
He gets all the credit for bringing all the gifts. I just want to tell you something. Have Santa bring only one or two things that are okay.
Like candy canes.
Yeah.
Santa for these candy canes.
Look, all the stuff that's going to break the day of, that was from Santa. The stuff that they, like, their eyes lit up, that's from you. You know why? Because you do all the work during the year. Santa rolls in, takes all the credit, and then rolls out of there. So you give the cool stuff to the kids. And then let Santa give kind of the garbage gifts. And that's how I want my kids to see Santa. He brought some garbage to me for a while. It was kind of fun. And and that's it. So this is my yearly reminder for that. But
I think you're absolutely right. And let me tell you something. I really feel for your son. Because
he's even more mature for his age. So he's the oldest kid in the family, but he's also very mature for his age.
Well, and this is where I guess Colin would get this because she's the oldest. Isn't Colin the oldest?
No, she's in the middle.
Oh, she's the middle.
But she is
and
definitely
the baby.
Yes. And so she's definitely the most responsible, though.
Right.
I will say she is the most responsible in her family.
So I know what it's like to be the oldest. I'm the oldest of 7 kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so I grew up in a very similar situation to your son. And it's not easy maturing when everyone else is still so young.
Yeah.
And I think about the difference between myself and my youngest sister. My youngest sister is 14 years younger than me. Okay. I grew up in a household full of children, and she grew up in a household full of adults and teenagers, and it could not be more different. And
right,
so
and that was me. I was always trying to get along with. I was trying to make jokes around people who are way older than me.
Yeah.
I was trying to get along. I was trying to be noticed in a group, you know, where people had their friends over and stuff like
that's
that.
Right.
So I get that.
And a lot of those experiences that I had early on were a big deal for my parents, but by the time my younger siblings came around to those same things, it barely registered. And so I think. There are a couple of things happening here. Number one is he's struggling through that growing up, but also being held back by a family that is much younger than he is, right?
Right.
And so I know what that's like to kind of be held back. And it's no one's fault, right? But also you kind of have to get past the, what's the word I'm looking for? The uniqueness of his position.
Mm-hmm.
Like what you're about to do with him regarding phones, you're going to do it five more times. And it's going to be the biggest, it's you're not even going to remember how you handled it with him. Right. Once you get on down the road, you're like, how old was he?
But see, the thing is that, yeah. And
I guess you have to text him. You say, hey, how old were we when you got your phone? Because he'll remember. You won't.
Right.
And I was chatting with a dad.
Well, certainly the other kids are going to remember it, too. I feel like if we hold out as long as we can, then the kids can go, well, when he got it, when he was then. And I'll go, nope, he was 14, too. Yeah. Sorry, man.
Well, and that's, I mean, setting that expectation early is awesome. And but I'm going to tell you what, though. I bet that, you know, if you had, like, let's say you set a 14-year age, minimum age for a phone. Just because that's going to become such a no-big-deal thing, I bet that age is just going to naturally start to sneak down. And because you won't feel the same. You'll feel compelled to wait as long as possible for him, because you've never done it before. And then once you cross that bridge, he's got a phone, your next son has a phone, it's going to be easier to start introducing that earlier out of convenience, especially once you hit your daughter. Because she's going to
hit my daughter. Listen, I, you know, I don't do that.
Because
only my sons.
She's going to have a completely different social scene and outlook on that.
For sure.
Completely different relationship.
And no, so, and you know, the other thing is before we get to the Zen headline here in a minute, I was just going to say too, my kids are just like, I don't know, they love the comparison thing. And when I was younger, I keep telling them this. I had a pager when I was 16. I was begging for a pager. When I was 16, because cell phones didn't exist. All right, take the break. We got a Zen headline next, I assume, because Ethan Millard should have done his homework and gotten this as a Zen headline. We'll be right back. More to go right here. KSL's The Nightside Project podcast.
Could I share one more thought with you about kids and phones?
And we're back. Yeah, go ahead.
I was chatting with a dad in my neighborhood. We were talking on the phone. Because his son and my son are friends, and his daughters and my daughter are friends.
Oh.
And they're kind of getting into, you know, computers, things like that. His son has built his own computer, and my son has shown some interest in that. And so I was talking to him about it, just wanted to get him some perspective. And he shared something with me that I thought was really wise. And he said, you know, at a certain point, you just have to extend a little bit of trust. And I thought, you know what? I guess that's true. At a certain point, you just kind of have to do it and hope it goes well. And if it goes well, great. If it doesn't, well, then you can reevaluate.
It's a learning experience for everybody.
And I thought, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Because I'll tell you what, I know it's a little different from a phone, but in terms of smartphone, there's some similarities. I'm really up in my head about my son having his own computer. I'm up in my head about it completely. Now, I know kids his age have their own laptops, whatever else for gaming, things like that. But I just have not been able to come to terms with it, primarily because of up to this point, computer was such a boogeyman.
Right, you've been able to control everything a lot more too.
You can, and
but even then, but with a computer, you feel like there's less control and even more access.
Right, and it's like when I was growing up. Computers or something, it was like, have these only in a public place in the house, because the second your kid gets online, he's going to be kidnapped. And, you know, it's
kidnapped
like there's these boogeymen online.
Yeah.
And you, at a certain point, you kind of have to trust your kid and just get past it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you give him those 10 numbers for his phone and one of them ends up being a drug dealer and the other ends up being a kidnapper... Well, then, you know, you reevaluate, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But I don't know if that's helpful. But.
No, it's good. You're about 5 years ahead of me. And so I'd sort of just kind of look at your mistakes and go, Perfect. We had a lot of friends that are in our old neighborhood that were like that, too. They have, like, 15-year-olds, and I'm like, oh, that's crazy that you guys are going through that. And then I go, note to self, I'm not doing any of this. Yeah, when we get home. So.
But I thought it was – I appreciated that he had shared that with me. So that, you know what? He's right. At a certain point, I have to extend a little trust.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But we'll all survive it.
Yeah, I agree.
As long as there are no kidnappers involved.
You did it.
All right.
Well, we got through Zen Headlines music without you actually sharing a Zen headline. Is that a was that the Zen headline?
That wasn't.
Oof. This
Zen headline, by the way, was shared by Unky Ben. Good old Unky Ben. I hope he's doing well. He and Chica.
Oh yeah.
Unky Ben shared this with me using the hashtag Zen headlines on Twitter. If you see a great headline that is in the general positivity spectrum, share it with us at hashtag Zen headlines. A North Korean gymnast. Do you read this story? Did you see this one?
No, and what's crazy to me is that there are North Korean gymnasts.
Well, you know, the communists have always done well with gymnasts.
That's true. No, that's true. I forgot. Yeah. And if there's one way you can show the rest of the world that you know how to dominate people, it's by dominating children and making them tiny and making them jump over things.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So there you go.
A North Korean gymnast has escaped to South Korea by swinging himself over the border barricades without triggering sensors. The man, reported to be in his 20s, surrendered after a manhunt by the South Korean military once they realized what had happened. The unnamed man was detained without incident and asked for asylum, so they're doing an investigation. Officials were so taken aback by this that they asked him to demonstrate twice how he was able to jump over the 3-meter fence without triggering any alarms.
Yeah.
Military authorities in South Korea vowed to investigate why their high-tech security systems did not detect this guy going over the 3-meter fence. That's 9 feet, which means he did not jump that, right? I mean, no human can jump 9 feet.
Unless you're a North Korean gymnast, you've been working really hard.
I wonder if he pole vaulted it or something.
Yeah, probably had the help from a monolith that was installed earlier in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
By some artist.
I did want to share something with you. I know maybe it sounds a little gloom. COVID can kind of freak you out a little bit. And I found this little piece of something. You know televangelist Kenneth Copeland, right?
Yeah.
Somebody mixed down some of his I guess it would be to
his preachings?
Yes, some of his preaching, but particularly him casting COVID out of the United States to some heavy metal.
You can do that?
Oh, yeah. Check this thing out. Are you ready for this?
Standing in the office of the prophet of God.
Well, hold on a second.
What?
That guitar is not with it. That is not playing. Guitarist, right? That's not like the church. This isn't like the church band, is it?
No, of course not. But
what
he needs
happening?
To. It's more strong. No, a guitarist got a hold of this and then actually went and made it lyrics, basically. He basically just played along to it. I just think it's amazing. The guitarist, they have him split screen. It's just like a kid, you know, who's basically just playing along to Kenneth Copeland doing the.
Wow.
Yeah. I thought, that's my new favorite. That's my ringtone now.
I'll tell you what, if Kenneth Copeland is smart, he's going to hire that guitarist.
So, I mean,
that's
dude, I've never felt more strongly about the things that were coming out of Kenneth Copeland's mouth than just now.
Hey, look, man, if you want to cast out COVID, you got to have some hard metal backing you up.
All right.
Cast out COVID.
If you want to download the podcast, you can do it. And if you're listening to this, you probably already did. But you tell a friend.
I had a chance, though, by the way. Sorry, apologize for interrupting you. I had a chance to promote this podcast, though, because I filled in on KSL
on the air
last week.
Nice.
It was really fun.
Nice. Did you see any cuss words?
I said them all.
No, that's good. That'll keep you invited back. Well, Scott Mitchell on Unrivaled the other night talked Jeez. About how he had to go get his one of his coaches promised tickets to his mom, and they were in Hawaii, I think, for a game, and he promised the tickets to his mom, and he was like, they're like, where are the tickets? And they couldn't find them. They go, she's like, well, where's the coach? And the other coaches were like, they were like really sheepish about it, and they said he was at this bar. It was actually a strip club. So Scott's mom rocks into a strip club and goes, Jim Fossil, give me those tickets to the game you promised me. So Scott told that story on the air. I just told him he had to call it a gentleman's club. That was it. So there you go.
Call it a gentleman's club. We're good.
Yeah. Hey, for Ethan Millard, I'm Alex Keery. Thanks for being with us. You can listen to KSL's Unraveled on the air at night and download that podcast. You can download the Nightside Project. Tell a friend, teach a neighbor. Ethan, what's your commitment to podcasts this week? How many do you want to do?
I think we ought to do another one day after tomorrow.
Okay. I'm set for it. Day after tomorrow, set your calendars.
Okay.
We'll be right back. For Ethan Millard, I'm Alex Keery. See you next time, everybody.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are. And this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.